Hello and welcome to the Sewers of Paris. Join us on tonight's special holiday episode featuring Christmas experts Dave White and Alonzo Duralde of the Linoleum Knife podcast family, plus some additional treats. This holiday season, I hope you're surrounded with good cheer, fabulous family and friends, and comforts aplenty to keep you warm in the dark winter nights. And when it comes to feeling cozy, I can think of no greater experts than Dave White and Alonzo Duralde. Whether it's cooking glorious feasts, binging on cheesy specials, or unearthing obscure wintry films, this husband and husband team are the pinnacle of holiday warmth. Dave and Alonzo were my guests on the very first Sewers of Paris holiday special back in 2015, sharing their advice for enjoying a jolly holiday, so we're going to start this episode by listening back to that conversation. Then we'll hear a more recent chat from earlier this month when Dave and Alonzo popped by for one of my regular live streams to talk about how they're celebrating in 2018. Next, I'll bring you a quick dive into my favorite holiday special, Christmas at Pee-wee's Playhouse. Every month, I produce a video for my Culture Cruise series where I talk about LGBTQ themes on TV and movies and books, games, and more. And for December, I took a look at Pee-wee's 1988 special and its connection to Judy Garland's Christmas specials of the past, Glee episodes of the future, and believe it or not, 18th century French theater. Then we'll wrap things up with a traditional Christmas carol sung by some past Sewers of Paris guests. So now let's start with my Dave and Alonzo interview from 2015, who joined me in what you might call the sewer of the mind. Dave and Alonzo, welcome to the Sewers of Paris.
Merry Christmas.
It smells.
Well, yeah, you get used to it. So you guys, you're the hosts of Linoleum Knife, the fantastic podcast of the cinema. And you're also somewhat experts on the topic of Christmas, right?
Our brand is Christmas, you might say.
Oh, my goodness. Wonderful. So, yeah, so how have you guys come to be such experts?
Well, you know, I'm a lifelong Christmas nerd myself, and then in recent years, I sort of solidified my standing by writing a holiday film guide called Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas. And it's a guidebook to Christmas movies ranging from, you know, your usual It's a Wonderful Life and Gremlins to Die Hard and even Eyes Wide Shut.
So what are your favorite holiday entertainments?
For the Sewers of Paris audience, the one I really want to recommend, it's been very hard to find for quite a while, but it is now currently streaming on YouTube. The movie is called Some of My Best Friends Are. It's from 1971, and it's from American International Pictures, which is the low-budget outlet that gave us all the Roger Corman movies over the years, Monsters and Bikers and Bikini Beach Parties and you name it. This clearly was somebody's idea to make a low-budget ripoff of The Boys in the Band. It's set in a gay bar on Christmas Eve in early 70s New York City, and you've never seen so much self-loathing in your life.
There's one in every city. One place where, for a few hours, they forget the whispers behind their backs and share the one secret that makes them different.
It's a cavalcade of misery, but it's so ineptly done and exaggerated that it becomes fairly hilarious pretty quickly.
Is this something that you like watch as a tradition, or how did you come by it?
Outfest years ago did a screening of it, and it wasn't even at Christmas time, but, you know, it was a movie that I knew about from Vito Russo's book, The Celluloid Closet, but had never had a chance to see because it's never been released on video. And with a packed audience of gay men, it became a genuine laugh fest.
And Dave, how about you? What do you like to consume at the holidays?
I'm with Alonzo. I watch all the movies that he watches, but I tend, you know, toward the traditional. And so, therefore, to talk about It's a Wonderful Life again, to be the millionth person to talk about that film, who's got anything left to say? But a new thing came into my life in the year 2008. It was a cookbook.
It's a cookbook.
It's a cookbook. I cook all year long. I'm not great, but I tend to us in this house, and I like most of all to make food for my friends, and especially at Christmas time, I really want, you know, I want to step it up. I want to make them lots of treats. I want them to come over to my house and stuff their faces, and it's a particular goal of mine to make the gays who are body obsessed, the ones who don't allow themselves anything, I want to break them when they come to my house. I want them to gorge on like gingerbread and stuff before they leave. I want them to leave with a stomachache. And so the thing that came into my life in 2008 was the Nigella Lawson Christmas cookbook. And I have been a big fan of hers for many years now. And what I love about her the most is that she isn't a chef. You know, you'll see from time to time people dismissing her as just, you know, oh, she's just a television presenter. She isn't a real cook. And they're kind of right. I mean, and I think that's where her appeal, her very wonderful to me appeal lies. She's a food writer who has never written about food in the way that we've all come to know as sort of insufferable foodism. She writes about feeling good, and she writes about enjoying food, and she writes about the way we eat it and why we eat it and with whom we eat it. And so for her to have a Christmas cookbook, for me, is the perfect combination of Nigella and Christmas.
The thing about Nigella, to quote another Christmas movie I love, A Christmas Without Snow, she is an amateur in the truest and best sense of the word, which is that she does this out of the love of it and not because she has this background or this, you know, professional identity as a food person. Her genuine enthusiasm comes through in all of her TV work and in her books, and I'll take that over Kraft any day.
Well, you guys, thank you so much for coming. I've set out some refreshments, so just make yourself at home.
We'll be over by the punch bowl.
Well, that was Dave and Alonzo of 2015. Now let's jump ahead to our more recent conversation. Every month, I host two live streams where a guest or two pops by to talk about the entertainment they're obsessed with right now, and Dave and Alonzo were gracious enough to join me yet again. You'll hear us chatting with each other and with viewers who type messages to us in real time as we respond. Yay, hello.
Hello.
And look at all how seasonal your shelves are. Anyway, everybody, please welcome Dave White and Alonzo Duralde of the Linoleum Knife family of podcasts.
Howdy.
Hi. I love when my guests introduce themselves, so please introduce yourselves to everyone who's lovely, and I will eat some of this oatmeal while you're talking.
Hi, I'm Alonzo Duralde. Dave is my husband. We co-host the Linoleum Knife podcast. I'm also Film Reviews editor at The Wrap and co-host of the Who Shot You podcast and author of the holiday movie guide, Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas.
I have insomnia and I baked the cake this morning.
Oh no. Did it?
I mean this morning, like 3 o'clock this morning.
That is, I think, honestly, you're like Fred the Baker, right? You have to wake up nice and early, bright and early.
Yeah.
And you're doing your part for God and country, by which I mean Mary Berry.
She is the ruler of us all.
I'm so pleased with how branded, how on brand you are right now with all the Christmas stuff. So let's dive right in. What did you bake?
Well, I thought I was going to bake this like at 6 this morning,
mm-hmm.
but then the insomnia hit and I was wide awake and I thought, well, bug it. I'm going to get up now and bake that cake. So,
oh, by the way, can we swear on this?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay,
good.
Until
I do that a lot.
Yeah.
So Ruth Reichel, she used to be the editor of Gourmet magazine before it went under. And she's the author of many cookbooks and even at least one novel. The novel's called Delicious. Although I have not read this novel, there is a recipe in the novel for a gingerbread cake.
Okay. That seems unusual. Like, it's usually flat.
I'm sorry, what?
Gingerbread in a cake as opposed to, you know.
Oh, you're thinking of a gingerbread cookie.
Yeah.
This is a cake.
Okay.
And so in the book, there's a recipe for it. And so now you can get this recipe just pretty much anywhere you on the internet. You can type in Ruth Reichel gingerbread cake. The book's name is Delicious.
Mm-hmm.
And up will come that recipe. And I knew I wanted to make it because I've been addicted to the Nigella Lawson sort of sticky gingerbread cake. And I've been making that for years at Christmas time. But I thought, I'm going to branch out a little bit and do a different one. And so when I woke up this morning, I did it, and it has unusual ingredients in it. It has cardamom. It has lots of orange zest in it. There's
a boozy glaze that goes on top of it, and then another orangey glaze that goes on top of that.
This sounds fantastic. This is like spiced rum the cake.
I just took a bite of it before we Skyped in, and it is so fucking good. And it actually, and I was proud of myself because it came out. It wasn't overbaked. It wasn't underbaked. Paul Hollywood would give me a handshake for that.
Make sure you live in an apartment that has booze and cardamom at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, honestly, that sounds great. That's what I want to set like a
cardamom in the spice.
Perfect. That is perfect.
So anyway, I did that, and now I'm ready for guests to come over this afternoon and decorate our tree, and they can eat this cake and tell me that I'm a genius.
Fabulous. And you'll be just like kind of like dozing off, which is like the perfect reason to get rid of guests once you're done with them.
The snoring does put them off.
Well, that is so seasonal. You're putting me so to shame with how Christmassy you are. You are, of course, an expert. Alonzo, you literally wrote the book on Christmas holiday stuff. And so I imagine that you may get a little sick of the same holiday stuff year after year. And I'm curious, something I wanted to ask you was, do you change it up what you do for Christmas and what you watch and what is like your holiday tradition? Or no, it's just like,
I do. Well, okay.
No, yeah. Oh, yeah, he does change it up. He watches a different motherfucking Hallmark movie every night.
How could they're like not country songs? They're all the same thing.
Not just that, though. There are movies that kind of are in the steady rotation. Like every year I want to watch It's a Wonderful Life. And we have a whole thing where we go to this theater in Santa Monica and we see it on the big screen. And, you know, it's a whole thing. And like every year I'm going to want to watch like the Albert Finney Scrooge. Yeah, that's the one I like. Every few years, there will be, you know, one of the older ones that I want to check out. But I'm also always excited about the prospect of new ones, and I hope that there's going to be new ones. This year, actually, there's several, and I think a couple that would be of particular interest to the Sewers of Paris audience. An indie film called 1985, from director Yen Tan. It is a period piece, as the title suggests. It's about a gay man coming home to Texas for Christmas. He's not out to his family. He's a gay man in New York in 1985, so it's that Christmas where it's probably the last time he's going to see them. It's a very poignant film. It's set entirely over the holiday season. It stars Corey Michael Smith from Gotham and Carol, and the parents are played by Virginia Madsen and Michael Chiklis. Really beautifully done film, really powerful. I very highly recommend it. It is currently for sale or rent on Amazon Prime.
Okay.
And then another movie that I saw at Outfest this summer is a Chilean import called Cola de Mono, which literally means monkey's tail, but apparently it is both the Chilean version of eggnog and also a somewhat insulting term for anal sex. Anyway, so it is about two brothers, and they're very different, but they both sort of come to realizations about themselves over the course of Christmas, and then things get kind of dark. I've been sort of describing this as Stranger Things, but not obsessed with Stephen King and Steven Spielberg, but more for gay men whose early sexuality was shaped by Cruising and The Fan, starring Michael Biehn.
Okay. Oh, that's great.
Yeah, so I really love this movie. It's bananas, and the cover art is the sort of weird kaleidoscopic thing of dudes in jock straps. So, you know, what's not to like?
Okay.
TLA Video just put that out on Blu-ray.
Of course, they did.
Yes, bless them. And then we disagree on this movie, but I'm a big fan of Anna and the Apocalypse, which just hit theaters in limited markets and is getting out there. And it is a Christmas zombie musical that I think is very charming.
It's not.
Whatever.
Well, he may be the Christmas movie expert, but we are both legit film critics. This is our job.
Yes.
And we are weird in that we are the married film critics in the United States. Like, we're the only ones. So I at least get to weigh in on Anna and the Apocalypse on our podcast, Linoleum Knife.
Yes, you can hear us bicker about that at length there.
And that is where we will have a big fight about it.
Yes. Everybody.
Yes.
Mandatory listening. Do go subscribe to not only Linoleum Knife, but Linoleum Knife and Fork and Linoleum Knife TV and the whole suite of offerings.
Yes, at our Patreon page. And if you're not already supporting Matt's Patreon, hey, it's Christmas.
Yes, and also, of course, a big thanks to everyone in the chat and everyone who's watching who is already a Patreon supporter. It is thanks to you that I'm able to do this, that Dave and Alonzo are able to do what they do. So this is the time of year when we say, oh my goodness, thank you so much for making our stuff possible to give to you. Our gift to you. You're welcome.
that you pay for.
That you pay for. Yeah, it's a gift. Mutual exchange. we've got some requests in the chat. More swearing. swearing was promised. Some folks are saying they haven't put up the lights yet. Last year, my lights stayed up till August, says Carrie. my tree isn't even up, says Carrie. And someone said we never took our lights down. And usually, my tree usually goes up the day before Christmas Eve. Christmas Eve Eve. Well, wow. Better late than never.
Sure. Look, in ye olden times, it would go up on the 24th and you would decorate it then. Like, that was a whole big to do.
Right.
Sometimes even people they would go to bed and wake up and to a decorated tree that Santa left behind, you know. So everybody does it differently. I know people have had theirs up since before Thanksgiving. We do a living tree. So we decided to go a little later than usual because.
Well, it's not alive anymore.
Well, but you know what I mean? As opposed to it's not a balsam hill. And I was raised Catholic, so I kind of like having the Christmas tree up through Epiphany, which is January 6th. Mm-hmm. And years past, if we get the tree too early, it's already drooping by Christmas, and by Epiphany, it's downright sad.
We always, in my house growing up, did what we called Little Christmas. And I know this is sort of a holiday that my family has adapted to its own purposes, where around December, well, around now, just around December 10th-ish or so, we would put our shoes out by the door at night. And then in the morning, there would be an orange and some small piece of chocolate inside.
Yeah, that's actually a variant of St. Nicholas Day.
That's right. Yes, yes.
Which I think was 2 days ago. I think it's December 6th, technically. But I was hearing about this for the first time this year, just through all of my network of Christmas obsessives on Facebook. That was a new one on me. But yeah, the thing, you leave the shoes out and they're filled with candy or, you know, some sort of early gift. Mm-hmm. And apparently that was sort of... Well, the modern Christmas is sort of a knockoff of the old St. Nicholas Day celebration, but some people still do St. Nicholas Day as a little separate thing as a lead up to Christmas.
Yeah, yeah. It was sort of like Christmas practice. And then we would also simultaneously do Hanukkah. So it was quite a mix between that. We'd have the tree up. We'd have like the menorah near, but not too close to the we did a live tree as well. Like I had there was a period where I was working at Strawberries when that was a thing, the music store. And I had
we had peaches in Atlanta.
What's that?
We had peaches in Atlanta.
I think, part of the same, like, weird. It was like the parent company was called Trans World Entertainment Corporation, which is like as Bond villain as it gets.
Yes.
but I had a manager there who I kind of clocked him when he was like, I just love Cats. I love the musical Cats. It's my absolute favorite of all time. And then around Christmas, he was describing his tree, which it was like the plasticest he could find. It was all, it was like the silver, it was like a tree that was made to look like tinsel, it was made of. And then he would do this thing with like fake birds on the tree and he would spray it with snow, but then spray the snow blue. Like it was the most constructed. Yeah, I know. It was
That's a lot of look.
it was an intense look. Yeah, there was a lot of artifice to his Christmas. And at the time, I don't think I appreciated camp fully enough to understand what he was doing.
That's getting it up.
It really
that,
intensely
that
was.
A coming out statement. what I love about sort of the way that the Christmas celebration has evolved is that, yes, it obviously does have these religious roots, but also you have the early church basically borrowing all the best stuff from other people's festivals. So, you know, historically, they think Jesus was probably born in the spring because in December, the shepherds wouldn't have been out in the fields, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, they realized early on that if they were going to compete with the super popular pagan religions at the time, it would behoove them to sort of like glom onto their most awesome traditions. So that's why the solstice and the Yule and Saturnalia and the birth of Mithra and all that stuff all is lumped together now into what Christmas is. And so I find that hilarious when people talk about, you know, the true meaning or the way it used to be or blah, blah, blah. It's ever evolving. I mean, it was banned by Oliver Cromwell because it used to just be an excuse for people to get drunk and go door to door and harass people for money and food. Mm-hmm.
It's like we've been A-B testing for the best holiday for like 2,000 years. And so we're finally like narrowing in on like the platonic ideal of holiday. Over in the chat, Lily says, eggnog is gross, but I love ass. I heard that.
Why not both?
Yeah, why not both? There we go. Then work that into the holiday. Tay says, Finnish people don't sip eggnog. We have glögi. It's a beverage. Tell me more about glögi. Paul Bunyan's attention is caught by the man in the jockstrap on the cover there. My favorite thing about eggnog, says Operazine, is the flavor of egg white. It's not for me. I like the fakey eggnogs rather than the like, oh, I made this for real out of eggs. My Christmas has been informal, says Lily. For being a religious holiday in America, my family never really treated it as such. Taya says there's James Bond. There's some chat about James Bond in the chat. There's James Bond books. Oh, goodness. What a world opens up to you. I recommend you do an image search for James Bond novel covers because there's a whole series of James Bond novels that are gorgeous. So look those up. They look like the, who's the artist who did all those beautiful titles in the 60s?
Saul Bass.
Yes, Saul Bass. They look kind of like Saul Bass covers, and they're beautiful.
And by the way, if you want a little James Bond in your Christmas,
yes.
Her Majesty's Secret Service is a Christmas movie.
We just got Hulu, and I think Honor Majesty's Secret Service is on there because they've got like a weird smattering of the Bond films on there.
That
will be part of our Christmas tradition, I think.
It includes the song, Do You Know How Christmas Trees Are Made?
Do you know how Christmas trees are made? The same way as all trees?
Well, there's an old Carol Burnett Show clip where she has like some boys choir come on and sing that song. Mm-hmm. And I guess it was the same year because she says, as featured in Honor Majesty's Secret Service.
Well, there you go. I mean, we'll add that to the rotation along with Pee Wee's Holiday Special, or I think it's actually Christmas Special. Pee Wee's Christmas Special, like a mainstay for me of the holidays. Oh, there, you know, I just watched the opening to that, and I've forgotten just how many, like, the guest star list. It's like, is this whole special going to be listing guest stars? Because there's so many, and they're so varied. And so it's Cher and the Marine Men's Chorus and
Katie Lang and Joan Rivers and Oprah Winfrey and Frankie and Annette. And yeah, no, it's crazy.
Yeah, I want to say
he uses them all really well. Zsa Zsa Gabor.
Oh, gosh. Yes. And Charo, naturally. Charo.
Yeah, of course.
James just whispered Grace Jones off to the side.
Oh, that, I think one of the greatest things Grace Jones ever did ever.
Yeah. 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 It's that appearance, which you like. Glides out of the shipping container that she's in.
Yeah.
Back in the box, Grace.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. Dr. History says, I recommend Casino Royale and Thunderball.
I love the 60s Casino Royale. It's an acquired taste.
Oh, the bizarre one with, like, Peter Sellers and Orson Welles.
That's the one.
And like seven different directors, and you can like, it's like you could tell where like one director starts and another begins.
Yes, it's a hot mess, but it's my particular kind of hot mess.
It really, like that scene, if we can just like obsess over that scene for a moment, where like it's Orson Welles and Peter Sellers at the Baccarat table, and it really, like, I can't remember if I made this up or read this, that they hated each other so much they had to shoot their scenes separately.
That is correct. Okay. They did hate each other so much that they shot them separately. I think there's only one shot that the two of them are in, and the rest is just, you know.
Yes. It's so bizarre. Oh, it's so bizarre. Ian says, that's the one, Casino Royale and or Thunderball, the one with Diana Rigg and Joanna Lumley. Oh, my goodness.
No, that's on Her Majesty's Secret Service.
Okay, that's, okay. Well, that, good gravy. Am I misremembering that... That is the one with the one-off Bond?
Yes, George Lazenby.
That's right. That's right. Poor.
But he's
poor
better George. Than he gets credit for.
He is. Like, we've been spoiled with some perfect Bonds and some imperfect Bonds. When you go back and you watch, like, Timothy Dalton, for example, it's easy to remember, like, he was a Bond?
How did we let that happen?
Yes, who was asleep at the wheel for that? I just interviewed, actually, on an upcoming Sewers of Paris, hasn't aired yet, a person who is a family friend of the Broccoli's. His father was the Broccoli's chauffeur, and so they were a part of, like, family gatherings and things. It was like their chauffeur for, like, 30 years.
That's so Downton Abbey.
It really is. It really, you know, it's just so British is the thing. We haven't watched it yet, but there's a Great British Bake Off Christmas special on the Netflixes that I'm tempted by. But also, this may be controversial, and let me know how you guys feel about this. How do you feel about the new British Bake Offs with Prue?
Oh, and Noel, we're big fans.
A plus.
Okay.
Yep. We've been Noel fans back since the Mighty Boosh, so.
I do love, like, he came to me through the IT crowd, which we don't talk about anymore.
Yes,
all from the IT crowd, yeah.
And so, fantastic at that, and I do love Noel, and I do love Sandy. Prue, I think, is great. I find the new episodes stressful. Like, they feel like they're a little more reality show than it has been in the past. Like, it just feels faster and like there's more potential for disaster.
Maybe we're just more invested from having been watching the show for a while.
Yeah.
You know, maybe that's it. You know, we went back and we watched like season one with the delightful Ed Kimber. And, you know, I was like, okay, I see what the show is. And I want a show of just the documentary segments.
Are you watching Great American Baking Show?
I am aware of it. Let's put it that way. Who's the host of that? Sell me on Great American Baking Show.
It's got Emma Bunton as a host.
Okay. That sounds good.
What the fuck else do you need but a Spice Girl?
That seems not entirely American, but like not in a bad way.
Well, they shoot it in England.
Yes, with American contestants. So it's Paul Hollywood and an American pastry lady, Sherry.
I forget her name, but she's got three James Beard Awards.
Yes, she does.
So,
well, good for her. That's all I can say about. Okay, that's so strange that they shoot it in the UK.
That tent is British
and iconic.
I get, yeah, easier to ship everybody over than ship the tent over here.
Yeah, exactly.
Operazine says, okay. Operazine says, my Christmas video is the clip of Rock Hudson and Mae West singing Baby It's Cold Outside.
Oh, yeah.
That's not bad. What is, like, is there anything like brand new that's come out this year? Is there anything that hasn't come out yet that you're anticipating?
That's Christmassy? No,
I think it's pretty much all happening.
It's all out there,
you know,
right now.
Except
already.
For, you know, like I said, the whatever's left on the Hallmark slate, you know.
Right. Like, does it tend to like land Thanksgiving and then you kind of like sort through what you've got?
Pretty much. And sometimes even earlier, like they released that fucking Nutcracker movie.
Oh, yeah. That was like beginning of November.
Yeah.
Oh, I totally forgot about that. Yeah. The one that looks like Alice in Wonderland.
It was terrible.
That's the one. And and boy, did it.
That is unfortunate. Question from the chat from Kitty Lynch. Do you have a favorite Christmas pop song?
Ooh, I like Christmas Rapping a lot.
What?
From the Waitresses.
Oh. I like, okay. I thought you meant as a genre.
Oh, no. Specifically the song. I've been noticing that an old XTC B-side called Thanks for Christmas seems to be creeping more and more into the rotation these days. I'll hear it on like holiday stations and stuff. I like that one. Christmas and Hollis, of course.
Yes. I like it when Patti LaBelle sings This Christmas doesn't have her backup singers. That's on YouTube.
Yep. Yeah, if you've never seen that clip.
That is great.
I'm almost ashamed to say this, but there's an Amy Grant song that's going through my head and has been going through my head for about 4 days now. Because I don't know why, but for some reason, she has a Christmas special on this year, and it popped into our TiVo, and we watched it. And on that special, she sings a song that was on her 1983 Christmas album. Now, how do I know about this album? Well, I grew up in a super conservative and strict hardcore evangelical background. Mm-hmm. So I knew that record by heart in 1983. And I never thought I would hear this song again. And then she sings it on this special. And now I can't get this fucking song out of my head. And it's driving me crazy. It's called Emmanuel, and it's so simplistic. But it won't go away, and I'm very angry about this. I have listened to the entire Christmas album by Low. You all know that, you know the band Low?
I don't.
Well, they're fantastic, and they are sad. And every song on their record is kind of slow and sad. I've listened to the entire Tracy Thorn Christmas.
That's
CD.
A good sad Christmas record.
Tracy Thorn from Everything But the Girl. That whole record is slow and sad. And I can't get the fucking Amy Grant song out of my head, even though I've listened to nothing but slow and sad Christmas songs after it, trying to get it out of my head.
If you want something more upbeat, it's more kind of on the Americana flavoring. The Old 97s put out a Christmas album this year that's a lot of fun.
Okay, the Old 97s. I'm writing everything down. We've got in the chat, Thea Ortea says, I loved the Nutcracker movie, but Ian says, I'm still mad about Nutcracker not resolving the regency issue at the end. You can't leave a realm ungoverned. And Thea calls for Nutcracker 2 Interregnum.
Yeah, no one's making Nutcracker 2. I hate to break it to you.
With Sylvester Stallone.
Nutcracker 1.
Lily has a great question. What is your favorite Christmas parody song or a comedic Christmas song in general?
Oh, well, there's a whole Dr. Demento album of some fun stuff, and I can't remember the name of it, but there's a 12 Days of Christmas parody that's all about all the annoyances of Christmas, about shopping and hanging up the lights. And it's sung in this very exasperated tone of voice. And as the song continues, people get more and more exasperated. And the guy who had been singing, putting up the lights, just goes, one light burns out, they all burn out. You know, so I can't remember who did that one, but it's the 12 something of Christmas. That's a funny one.
I do remember that. There was, when I was growing up, a radio station back in the days when we listened to radio that would play, it would have like comedy Sundays, and like there would be 2 hours of stand up comedy. And that, I remember that one light burns out, they all burn out. I remember exactly. That vividly from when I was like 12.
And I don't know if it counts as a parody, but I'm a big fan of I Want a Hippopotamus for Christmas.
Oh, that's such a saccharine song.
But it's charming. I think Kristen Chenoweth should cover it because the woman who sings it sounds like her.
She really does. Gosh. For some reason, like, we've been catching up on The Good Place, and I just you saying that with a hard K on the name made me think of Kristen Bell singing it, which also, sure, why not?
That works.
Yeah.
I don't have a parody Christmas song favorite. I tend not to like the parody songs.
You like Jingle Bells, Batman Smells.
I'm waiting. Well, okay, sure, but everyone does. I'm waiting for the day that someone does a parody version of Joni Mitchell's River. I'll listen to that.
That's going to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, I would not put that past Lady Bunny. Like,
true.
Or yeah, Jackie B.
Trixie Mattel.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah,
I wish actually, I had a liver that I could drink more with.
You know, honestly, Dave, you saying that just like gave me this little pang of Trixie Mattel's Christmas album. Like, what a perfect thing that would be.
I thought you were going to tell me that there was one.
No. You just conjured it into existence.
Coming in 2019. We're thinking about it. It's going to happen.
I just saw her. She was here for, what was the show? She was just here in a show with Peaches.
True Beverly Hills?
Oh, True Beverly Hills, of course. She sings a song at the end about True Beverly Hills. And it is just the most delightful, pleasant moment I've had in a theater in, like, years. Do you do anything like in person? Do you have like, like there's the lighting of the tree or like the snowing at the Grove or whatever. Is there like stuff that you go to in LA? Because you're not in a climate that is not particularly like traditional Christmas.
I usually get my fake snow fix at one of the local theme parks. Most years I will go to Disneyland because I go there once a year just for the Christmas stuff. Mm-hmm. And they usually end their evening with like the fake snow in Disney. And then over at California Adventure, they have their whole like, you know, World of Color thing. They have a holiday extravaganza that's a lot of fun. This year I'm trying out Universal because I've still never been to the whole Harry Potter park. And apparently they have a whole
whole snow thing going there. So I'm very excited about it.
Do they have a Grinch thing at the Universal in LA?
They do. They do. Yeah.
That I'm sure, like, we've all seen, like, the Grinch getting the onion video. Is that crossed the radar? Yes. It is. Another recommendation to the chat to look up the Grinch getting an onion at a theme park, because there's a character actor who does a marvelous job staying in character.
The new Grinch movie is actually quite nice.
That is shocking to me, because, you know, obviously you hear about something like that, you're like, why do we need... Sorry, Dave, say that again?
It was shocking to us, too.
Yeah, so it's actually a good thing. And, like, it's not like nostalgia, like, we're just going to repeat everything, but we're going to do something new?
No, not at all. And it's not that horror show that Ron Howard gave us either. It's a whole different take on it, and it's lovely, and it's funny, and it's, you know, actually kind of... moving when it wants to be moving. It does what it's supposed to do.
That is delightful. Well, and you know, on that subject, someone had just scrolled away. Someone said that they appreciated the animated Nutcracker Prince from the early 90s with Phyllis Diller voicing the Mouse Queen. I mean, anything.
I have been hearing about this. This is like a Japanese, like, I've not seen it, but I need to. But do not under any circumstances watch the Nutcracker in 3D with Elle Fanning, because it's a nightmare. That's the one with the Holocaust metaphors and Nathan Lane as Albert Einstein.
Oh, yes. That is okay. I can see that being problematic.
A little bit. Yeah, it's terrible. Like, it's not even fun bad. It's just soul-sucking bad.
Opera Zine says, I once wrote a parody song for a Liza Minnelli impersonator called Mama Got Run Over by a Reindeer. It says, the Nutcracker Barbie movie is my jam. And also Ian's recommending a Barbie in A Christmas Carol. It's one of my top favorite Christmas movies.
I have seen the Barbie Christmas Carol. It is better than you might think.
It is kind of shocking, because there's a Barbie video where she talks about, like, it's basically Barbie talking to the camera about overcoming depression, and it's like, what? It's insane, but beautiful. It is actually really nice. It's like she's talking to the camera. She's like, you know, sometimes there are those days where you just feel kind of down. Well, here's what I do about that. It's actually like, oh, thank you, Barbie. Like, it's just nice.
You got to reach the kids where they live, you know?
Eat some gingerbread cake.
You'll
feel way better.
Do you have a favorite animated holiday thing?
I mean, the TV specials, obviously, you know, the Grinch and Rudolph Frosty. And I'm a fan of the 1974 Twas the Night Before Christmas, which he's not into. Animated features. Oh, Arthur Christmas.
Yeah, actually. Oh,
is it good? I haven't seen it.
Yeah. It's really good. It's very delightful. And it got kind of buried because it opened the same week as The Muppets and the Tintin movie and I think Hugo. Mm-hmm. But it's it's charming and funny, and it's really it's Aardman. It's great.
Max Bader says, as a Jewish gay boy from New York, I've never known so little about any topic you've ever discussed. I'm really enjoying this discussion.
I'm an atheist, if that helps.
It gives you a kind of a fresh perspective. Are there Hanukkah movies?
There are two. Actually, Hallmark has promised that we're getting Hanukkah movies from them next year, which I'm very excited about. But there is one that's, I think, pretty funny called The Hebrew Hammer.
Okay.
Which stars Adam Goldberg, and it's kind of if Shaft were Orthodox, and he has to save Hanukkah from the machinations of evil Santa Claus Jr., played by Andy Dick. There's also a terrible one, which would be Adam Sandler's animated nightmare, Eight Crazy Nights.
Oh, yes.
That's kind of it, though, for Hanukkah movies. It is a sadly untilled field that I think is waiting for somebody to really make the classic Hanukkah movie.
Hallmark to the rescue, hopefully, in 2019.
Look, if there's a new avenue for them to tell the exact same story again, you know, I welcome it.
Yeah, it's basically a Christmas procedural.
Someone will have to return to... it's funny, usually these movies are about a big city woman going to a small town and learning to love Christmas. I'm imagining a small town woman going to, like, you know, Queens and learning to love Hanukkah. And instead of the cookie cutter red and green posters that Hallmark creates for every one of their movies, this one's going to be blue.
I love it. And yeah, I absolutely, I'd be delighted by that. Like a kind of a reversal there of, I was about to say like sort of an urban fantasy, and that just made me think of The Wiz. So like I'm combining all sorts of all sorts of genres, and I would also want it to be a musical.
Forget Pine Falls. I want to live in Jackson Heights forever.
Yeah, that's great. Somebody else. Oh, it's you know, the McElroys, who do like a billion other podcasts. They've been doing on My Brother and Me this segment called That Feels Like Christmas. That Sounds Like Christmas to Me, where they will describe two actual Hallmark specials and one made up one, and the other brothers have to guess which one is made up.
I was wondering about that. Somebody had tweeted that I've been doing like I get 1 minute on every episode of Who Shot You to sort of run through all the Hallmark movies I've seen that week. And somebody said that segment was ruining the McElroy thing for me. I'm behind on my Mabim Bam, so I didn't know what they were talking about.
Ian says the mayor of the new Grinch movie was Angela Lansbury. Well, that's yes. Outstanding.
She was in it all too briefly. Lansbury also pops up in Mary Poppins Returns, so she's having a busy Christmas.
Good for her. Oh, good. I'm delighted to hear that. You know, that's another one. I know you guys can't see, but we do have an Angela Lansbury in the live stream at the moment. Oh, no, actually, we don't. She got taken out when we put the library background in. But often there's an Angela Lansbury hovering like a hidden figure somewhere in my green screen backgrounds.
She's an angel hovering over us all.
Yes, yes. Or a portent of doom, depending on which Lansbury verse you're in. Do you have, you mentioned a while back the video of, oh goodness, is it Patti LaBelle without the background singers?
Yes.
Is there, this may be a tall order, is there a Christmas fiasco that you appreciate where something has gone wrong? You know, I think of like National Lampoon's Christmas, like the National Lampoon movie where everything's going wrong at Christmas.
Yeah, that's Christmas Vacation. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the Patti LaBelle thing is hilarious. That's at the National Tree Lighting where she comes out and like there's no backup singers.
It's during the Clinton administration.
Yeah, back in the 90s.
It takes place in the 90s. It's on YouTube, very easily found.
And you know, she's yelling at the cue card person to move the cards, and so she's just making up lyrics to This Christmas. And that's a pretty great one. I mean, Sandra Lee explaining how to make a Kwanzaa cake, which is not a thing, that she just sort of made it up. Christmas fiascos. I mean, there are some terrible Christmas movies, obviously, depending on the mood you're in. You know, the 80s Santa Claus the movie, I think, is kind of a disaster.
Not fun to watch at all. You know, so don't bother.
Santa Claus Conquers the Martians is fun if you watch the Mystery Science Theater or Cinematic Titanic or Riff Tracks versions.
I know they've all had a turn at that.
Yeah, we were just having this conversation on the podcast or with somebody about how there's this, the 1959 Mexican Santa Claus movie is one that we were introduced to via Mystery Science Theater, and at first just sort of thought of as this kind of bonkers bad movie, but it's the kind of movie that the more you look at it, the bonkers sort of takes over and you realize it's not bad. It's just this sort of surrealism for small children.
Yeah, honestly, and that is a project that I could get behind. Surrealism for small children.
It's for Buñuel, I call it.
That's great. Yeah,
and if you have Netflix, go back to the first or not the previous season of the Mystery Science Theater 3000 revival, and they do a movie called The Christmas That Almost Wasn't, which is really terrible, and they have a good time with it. But they cut an entire number, which I think they had to because there was just no way to make fun of it and not like go straight to hell, where Santa and the now reformed villain sing a song as Santa, you know, sets out to deliver all the presents. And the song is called "We've Got a Date with Children."
Oh, no. Well, good choice to cut that one out.
I think so. That was the wise move.
Yeah, yeah. You know, we watched the whole like season two of the revival recently because you know, we binged that around Thanksgiving as one is
pretty nice.
Yes. Oh God, that's pretty nice. I can't believe it took them so long to do Mac and Me.
It does seem like it was just sitting there.
Now that was the first time you saw that, right?
Yeah, I had never seen it before, and it did not disappoint.
Saw it on the big screen at the Castro Theater.
That's the place to see it.
Which it did not deserve. I think 1 week we went to see Jacques Tati in Playtime, and then the next week we went to see Mac and Me.
You know, I think of those movies together all the time.
It's a great double feature, double billing. What's your advice for folks who like construct the perfect? It's been a stressful day at work, and you need to unwind. You need to relax. What are all the components? Movie, decor, cooking, all the things that make like unwind, relax Christmas night.
Booze.
Okay, good start.
I would say find the kind of holiday candle you like. There are various versions that are, they smell like fir trees, or they smell like cinnamon cookies, or they smell like, you know, oranges and cloves. You know, I'm a big fan of the Ralph Lauren holiday candle. It's pricey, but it is intoxicating.
If you can convince somebody to give it to you as a gift,
so much
then
better.
You don't have to be the one to shell out the cash.
Yes.
It. Yeah.
Okay.
So, you know, light a candle, make yourself some cocoa, maybe slip a little something in that cocoa, you know, put your feet up. You know what? Watch Christmas at Pee-wee's Playhouse. I mean, that's just
perfect.
That's just perfection.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's, and stare at your tree, you know.
Just stare at it. We had there was a year where we had like a Yoda Christmas tree topper, and it felt right. Like it was just right outside. It was in like this hallway in the place where we live in San Francisco, and you'd walk out of the room and there'd be just this Christmas tree light is like the sole source of light in the house, and there's nothing more magic than just like being bathed in that glow.
Mm. Yeah, no, I can stare at it for a long time. I like to even lie on the ground under it, you know, move the presents aside and look up the trunk of the tree and see it lit from within. It, you know, that's something I kind of dig. And I have a Spotify playlist of Christmas music if people want to go check that out. Just it's under my name, Alonzo Duraldi. Very easy to find.
Oh, that is great. And I will definitely tweet out a link to that, the Alonzo Duraldi Spotify list. What is on it?
It's a mix of things, you know, Christmas songs that people don't know that they should, like Pearl Bailey's 5-Pound Box of Money. But also, you know, just some favorites, a little Andy Williams, a little, K-Star, people like that.
Perfect. I mean, that's something that I'm always looking for because there's a lot of Christmas music that just doesn't do it for me. And so, you know, sometimes you have to like really seek out someone who is been a steward of the classics.
Yeah, I mean, when people say they're sick of Christmas songs, I think it's they're sick of the 15 songs that you always hear at the mall, and who can blame them? There's also a really fun documentary called Jingle Bell Rocks about people who are sort of obsessive collectors of Christmas music, and it gets into some of the weirder crannies of the subject.
Oh, and there's also that lovely Santa Claus documentary.
I Am Santa Claus?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one.
With the it's got a nice gay Santa in there.
Yes, and is it Mankind, right? From Mick Foley from
Yes,
who's obsessed with being Santa. That's a fun movie.
It's just really
precious. And if you like Christmas documentaries, check out Frederick Wiseman's The Store, which is shot.
That's a good one.
Shot entirely at the Neiman Marcus flagship store in Dallas during the 1982 holiday rush, and it's amazing. And you can if you get the streaming service Canopy with a K, which is free for most people with their library card, you can watch it there.
Okay, I had a college teacher, a college professor who I think knew what he was doing when he recommended to me and a few of my friends David Sedaris's short story, Santa Land Diaries. And that's an important part of the holiday. Just reading that is important to me around this time of year.
Well, all of Holidays on Ice is great because it's got the letter to our friends and family.
Yes.
And back to the Christmas whore and like, you know, some really great stories.
That I seem to recall there's a review of a children's holiday play. Yes. And that one is like an evisceration.
Yeah, that one. And then the sort of the neighboring families who compete to who can give away more stuff.
Yes. Lily in the chat says, older generations, Christmas is for booze. That's a universal spirit, but not just booze. You can also smoke weed. There's a lot of enthusiasm for the McDonald's number in Mac and Me. Opera Zine wants me to ask you about the lyric change in Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas.
It stinks.
Well, I mean, there actually were two lyric changes, because the original version of the song was so bleak that Judy Garland was like, I would never sing this to my younger sister to try and cheer her up. So then they, you know, so the version in the film is already the second version. And then there's the version they use for the sort of, you know, out of context singing. And I get it. It's like, you know, there are a lot of times where a song, particularly from a musical, the lyrics are very specific to the plot or the characters or whatever. And then you have to switch it up a little to, you know, make it to the radio hit, basically.
Right.
So, yeah, look, as far as I'm concerned, the Judy Garland version is, you know, the version. But I don't hate, you know, Sinatra or whatever, except it has been pointed out that Hang a Shining Star Upon the Highest Bough makes no sense because the bough is actually, like, lower.
Yes.
opposed to making Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas into a happy song, because there are already too many goddamn happy songs at Christmas, and I don't like the enforced merriment of December. So what I like is when pop culture, popular culture, any kind of culture, acknowledges despair. I'm that kid who was, you know, would wake up on Christmas morning to the stepfather passed out drunk under the Christmas tree. So as an adult, I'm addicted to that darker, sadder version of Christmas. Whenever it happens in pop culture, I've joked about Joni Mitchell's River.
The hard candy Christmas, if you
but
will.
But that's, yes, a fucking great song, Joni Mitchell's River. And one of my current favorite Christmas films, a recent one from 2015, is called Christmas Again, Christmas, comma, again. Very much like the comma in Love Actually. But the this is about a guy who works in a tree lot.
Okay.
And he sort of sleeps in the trailer, and he's kind of broke, and he's getting over a breakup, and he's just sort of grieving all throughout that time of the year. And I don't think that the culture acknowledges
Sad Christmas
properly or effectively. And this is a film that does.
It's a great movie, and I think it's streaming on Amazon Prime right now.
Okay. Yeah, it can be tough to make the case for people to have yourself a melancholy Christmas.
I will always make that case, because you need the bitter with the sweet.
Yeah. Just like baking. There's enthusiasm in the chat for the Star Wars Christmas special, which is like drinking on Christmas, enjoyed in moderation.
I recorded a commentary track for that a couple of years ago with Bibbs and Whitney from Cancel Too Soon, back when they were doing the B-Movies podcast. You can Google it. It's fun.
It's a lot to put yourself through, because I think a lot of people don't realize just how lengthy it is.
And co-written by Bruce Valanche.
I had an opportunity to interview him about the experience of writing that. And I was like, as delicately as I could, I was like, were there drugs involved? And it was like, of course there were drugs involved.
Frank DeCaro and I had him at a Christmas thing that we did, where we interviewed people involved with different movies and TV shows. And yeah, that's all we talked about for 20 minutes. It was great.
Sophie McLeod recommends Santa Bring Me a Man by Two Tons of Fun, a.k.a. It's Raining Men, the Christmas version.
Oh, I don't know this one.
And Lily says, I don't understand Hallmark movies. 80% are the same movie with different actors. Yes, you do understand them.
And it's that level of predictability that makes them such comforting viewing. Mm-hmm. It's also,
they are repellent.
I've also had the conversation
entirely
with
repellent.
People.
I cannot watch them.
Where these are movies that almost dare you to watch them actively. Like, they exist to be the third most important thing you're doing at that given moment. Mm.
Yeah.
Like, you could be wrapping presents and talking on the phone and then also have this Hallmark movie on. But like, if you get the flu and you're on the couch, you can fall asleep in the middle of one of them and wake up in the middle of the next one, and you know exactly what's happening and what's going to happen and what has already happened. And so that's what the appeal is.
Or you could just watch porn.
Sure. That also works.
You already know what's happened, what's going to happen.
Yeah. I interviewed Michael, I've forgotten his last name, who does
Roddick.
the Sorry?
Varadi?
That's the one who does Christmas movies and horror films about yes. how sometimes when you're in a genre, like the rules of genre are compatible from one form to another in ways that you would not expect.
Yeah, there's been quite a crossover of late where like The Asylum, which cranks out like a lot of low budget horror movies, has gotten into the low budget Christmas business. And directors like Fred Olen Ray will make a Christmas movie because, you know, you're right. It is the steps are laid out for you to follow.
It's and that comforting thing of the repetition is now there's a lot of excitement in the chat for Christmas porn, which sure. I will say that controversial Dan Savage does not like sexy Christmas stuff. He is very stern about that.
Well, no one's making him watch it.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. Let's see. John Newman says, musters up his best Ed McCann for Lily. You are correct, but sorry, John. I think we lost who you were responding to with that one. And now the conversation has definitely moved to porn. Great.
Sorry.
Yeah. Well, you've got what is it, 1 week left to enjoy it before Tumblr takes it all away from us. So.
Well, here's the great thing about porn. It's all over the internet and not just on Tumblr.
It's true. We will be just fine.
If you really want to find it, it's in other places.
Yes. It's just, yeah, you could take a peek at some other
find
websites.
Favorite Tumblr people and go to their OnlyFans page and give them some fucking money.
It's true. Like, of all the things that are monetizable, this genre is the most.
Yes.
Let's see. This is something else that I wanted to ask you about, the Judy Garland holiday special, which I think a lot of folks, and I'm fine with this, discovered or came to through the Glee tribute to that special.
Hey, whatever it takes. The whole thing where she intentionally butchers the lyrics to the Christmas song just to throw shade at Mel Torme is pretty classic.
I was not aware of that.
Oh, there's a lot of subtext going on, believe me.
I feel like you need to do a commentary track for that. That's marvelous.
Not a bad idea.
Yeah.
That could be a good one. It is extremely watchable. You know, you see like the family coming in, you know, Liza's there with her gay boyfriend and
the series.
Yes. Bless her. And that's one that like I feel comfortable recommending to people. It's like, oh, this is a little more obscure. This is sort of like the gay 101. I feel like that college professor being like, oh, here, check out this David Sedaris, like the 20 something gays in my life. I could be like, here, check out this Judy Garland special.
Yeah, I love the whole the running gag of the crazy, like, dancing Santa troupe.
Oh, gosh. Yes. Ian says, the Glee holiday special throwback is amazing. Yes. I love when SNL does the Vincent Price Halloween specials.
I just watched the Halloween one again, which is great, with Jon Hamm doing James Mason.
Yes. Yeah, you know, there's a some like backstage story about how they were doing those, you know, it's what it sounds like, Vincent Price doing a Halloween special, and that Lorne Michaels was standing backstage during rehearsal and said to one of the actors in it something like, I like this is funny, but why now? A legitimate question.
Why not?
sure. Timely reference to Vincent Price.
Well, yeah, you know, I like that SNL just assumes that you go into the sketch knowing who Gloria Swanson is and why Kristen Wiig is going, I'm a pirate.
Yeah, that, you know, and again, it's like one of those things that like is best when annotated live by your friend who's delighted because this obscure thing that they know about is getting some recognition.
Exactly.
Are there things that like you want to do those comic, because you're both so knowledgeable about all of this stuff, commentary tracks, because you've done the Apple is among my favorite tracks for various movies. Is there stuff that you want to do in 2019?
Oh, always. You know, if you're interested, if you Google the commentary tracks that we've done, Linoleum Knife Presents More Linoleum Knife. We have done White Christmas. We have done the aforementioned Mexican Santa Claus, and we've done Die Hard. Those are all, you know, orderable from us via PayPal if you want us to send them to you, or if you're a Patreon member, you get them automatically at certain levels. I mean, it's weird. I mean, I wrote this book in 20, or the book came out in 2010, and it seems to sort of escalate every year how much stuff I'm doing for. Like, I wish I had done as much the year it came out as now, you know, but in 2010, there weren't nearly as many podcasts as there are now. So right. Suddenly I find all these new venues to talk about it. So, yeah, I mean, as much as I would love to have my Decembers back for actual Christmas stuff all the time, it's fun to get out there and talk about this stuff. So hopefully 2019, there's more opportunities to do it.
Do you ever find yourself being like, enough Christmas?
No.
That's great. That is that's really nice. And, you know, provided you pace yourself and you're not like, I can only imagine the nightmare of like being in production on something where you're like, oh, it's July and we've got to do Christmas stuff in July because we've got to produce it now to get it out.
Right.
But it seems like the kind of thing that like when, you know, when done in moderation, when paced, and then you have like the thrill, the excitement of it, like all December, and then you could take a step back from it for a while.
Well, you know, it's funny. Several years ago, Bibbs had said to me, oh, you should do a year-round Christmas movie podcast. And I thought, that's insane. Who would listen to that? And now there's three of them. So, you know, I wish I had hopped on that bandwagon early enough. Now it's too late.
Wow. Well, okay. I mean, it's like the Christmas tree shops that are just like going and going and going.
Yeah, there's clearly an audience that wants to listen to this stuff in April or whatever.
You'd mentioned a bunch of different like specials and things that you'd done commentary for. Is Batman Returns, is that a good Christmas movie, or is that a little played out at this point? Because I feel like Die Hard is a Christmas movie. We're like, yes, okay, we get it. It's a Christmas movie. Fine, let's move on.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been sort of discovered of late, and people talk about it a lot as a Christmas movie. So, I mean, you know, it's not. It's not the newest and the freshest, but it's still fun. And if you haven't looked at it as a Christmas movie, it's worth revisiting in that way. But, you know, you might also take a look at like Kiss Kiss Bang Bang or The Long Kiss Goodnight, or even dig back to something like there's a noir film from the 40s called Lady in the Lake, which is not only set entirely in Christmas, but it's the first studio movie where the whole film is POV. Like you hear the detective in the movie, but you almost never see him unless he's standing in front of a mirror, and the whole movie is people talking to him, i.e. you, because he is the camera. It's based on a Raymond Chandler novel.
Oh okay, wow. Is the Raymond Chandler novel written in second person?
I don't think so. I think that was something the director, Robert Montgomery, decided to throw in there. But yeah, it's a, why am I blanking on the name of this? It's not Mike Hammer. It's one of the famous screen, you know, literary detectives, and I can't think of his name. But anyway,
it sounds like what you're describing sounds a little like 1940s Blair Witch.
Kind of. I mean, it is this weird thing where, like, you know, you get punched and, you know, things like that happen.
Okay. So it's like doing a lot of the gimmicks of a 3D film.
Yeah, exactly. Except that it's still the 40s, so they don't have that yet.
Huh. Wow. Okay. We have volumes and volumes and volumes of recommendations, and so I'm going to be posting all of this stuff on Twitter. So if you go to my Twitter, twitter.com/MattBaum, I'll post like a long list of all the recommendations that we've got from the chat and from you guys, and everybody will have their viewing list for the next few days. Where can folks find you on the internets?
I'm at A Duraldi, A-D as in David, U-R-A-L-D-E, and I link to most of my stuff there, but you can read me at therap.com, T-H-E-W-R-A-P. We're at patreon.com/linoleumknife, and my show Who Shot Ya is at maximumfun.org. And of course, for a ton of recommendations in this department, pick up my book, Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas. It's available on Amazon as a book and as a Kindle.
I'm on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all three of them as D. Leland White. Leland is my middle name. That's L-E-L-A-N-D. So D. Leland White across the board.
And you can follow the show at LinoleumCast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook.
Fantastic. Dave and Alonzo, thank you so much for popping by. I feel like we've had our own little like mini Judy Garland special like dropping in to say hello. What a delight to have you here. And I know you've got some Christmas tree shopping to do. So will you be posting pictures of your Christmas tree anywhere?
If if you're lucky.
Okay.
I'll try and get some on the Linoleum Knife Facebook page. Matt, thank you for waking up early for us. We appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks so much for doing the show. I'm so glad that we could talk about this stuff.
And to quote Jack Plotnick as E.B. Harris, Merry Christmas. And to our Jewish friends out there, Merry, Merry Christmas.
Thanks so much, guys. We'll see you later.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks again to Dave and Alonzo for popping by the live stream, and I hope you'll join me for the next one. It's on Saturday, December 29th at 2 p.m. Pacific. My guest is going to be Scott Flannery, winner of The Amazing Race Season 29. In my conversation with Dave and Alonzo, we mentioned the 1988 special Christmas at Pee-wee's Playhouse. I do heartily recommend viewing that. It's on Netflix, but if you're crunched for time, and who isn't, you're in luck. I just released a YouTube video about Pee-wee's special as part of my ongoing Culture Cruise series. I'm going to play the audio of that for you now. It's a 10-minute all-you-should-know that hits the highlights of what I consider to be one of the most perfect holiday specials ever made. Stick around after that for some Christmas caroling with some past Sewers of Paris guests. But first, here's Pee-wee.
Welcome to my special Christmas special, starring me, Pee-wee Arden!
How can I describe Christmas at Pee-wee's Playhouse? Well, imagine if Weird Twitter and Gay Twitter teamed up with a wild assortment of queer icons to make a holiday extravaganza that takes place simultaneously in the 1950s, 1980s, and also completely outside of time and space. Sharing elements with Judy Garland specials of the past, Glee episodes of the future, and 18th century French theater, I consider this one of the most perfect Christmas specials ever made. All aboard and welcome to Matt Baume's Culture Cruise, where we take a deep dive on LGBTQ themes on TV, in movies, in books, games, and more. On this episode, we're heading to Pee-wee's Playhouse for a very queer-ish Christmas. Culture Cruise is made possible by the folks who pledge a dollar or more a month on Patreon, folks like Myron Bartlett. Thanks, Myron. There's rewards for backers, so head over to patreon.com/mattbaume or click the link in the description to join the folks who make Culture Cruise possible. Pee-wee's Playhouse was a bonkers kids show in the 1980s, starring an impish troublemaker who lives in a magic fantasy playhouse, surrounded by toys and talking objects and cartoons. The show was inspired by madcap kids' variety programs of the 1950s, like Howdy Doody and Pinky Lee, which were themselves an evolution of vaudeville, a kind of live variety show theater that became popular in the U.S. after the Civil War. And vaudeville, in turn, is thought to have roots in French performances of the late 1700s, then known as Voice of the City or Voix de Vie. I know that's more history than you need to watch a goofy man-child play with a yo-yo, but I just want you to know that Pee-wee evolved out of a rich tradition, hundreds of years old, of jumping around and acting real silly. On his 1988 Christmas special, the holidays are upon us, and Pee-wee is beside himself with excitement about presents.
What would you put on my Christmas list if you were me?
About snow.
You don't have any snow at your house.
Just use 20 pounds of coconut shavings.
About special guests.
Sure, what are you doing here?
About presents.
Do you think your stocking's big enough?
I'm not finished yet. Here's the left one.
And about presents.
How is Santa supposed to get all of this down that little chimney?
I already thought of that.
I'm having the chimney expanded.
The show blasts the audience with one surprise after another. There isn't a single aspect that doesn't make you say, "What?" from Pee-wee's strange demeanor.
Connect to Christmas dot! Ba, la, la, la.
To the sheer, what are you doing here, of the guest lineup?
Look, it's Magic Johnson!
Hi, Pee-wee.
To the fact that he has Jewish dinosaurs living in his walls. Compare that to the far more placid holiday specials of the time, a retelling of A Christmas Carol, for example, or hour-long toy commercials like The Cabbage Patch Kids' First Christmas. Most programming around the holidays was either a retread of the same old stories or something so modern it just felt tacky. But Pee-wee creates something magic by remixing traditions to create something new. That's thanks in large part to his lineup of guests, which is very queer, amazingly so given the time. For example, there's Grace Jones, avant-garde artist and entertainer. Jones rose to fame in gay nightclubs and was known informally as Queen of the Gay Discos. And yet, in a bizarre and wonderful moment, she arrives in a shipping container to serenade American television audiences with a Christmas carol like it's the most natural thing in the world. Oprah calls.
Hello!
Out. And as beloved as she is by the gays, her call isn't important enough to interrupt another gay icon.
Merry Christmas, Oprah! I'm gonna
gonna have to call you back. I have Dinah Shore on the other line.
Dinah Shore was a singer and talk show host. She wasn't a lesbian, but she did start a golf tournament that over the years evolved into the world's largest annual lesbian pool party in Palm Springs. And there's more.
You all know what to do whenever anyone says a secret word, right, Cher?
This special aired 30 years ago, and Cher would still look amazing in that dress. There's also a pop-in by lesbian singer Katie Lang, who was just rising to fame at the time and was still years away from appearing in the anxiety dreams of Ellen DeGeneres.
Ellen, over here.
We also get glimpses of Whoopi Goldberg, who just played a queer character in The Color Purple. There's Joan Rivers, who'd been hanging out with the gays since the 1960s.
Where have you been, my child?
Mainly Fire Island, and I certainly wouldn't run into you there. But,
And there's Little Richard, the flamboyant singer known for songs like Tutti Frutti, and also for his love of all-gender orgies.
Happy week! Woo!
And how about Charo, a Spanish singer and one of the most gifted guitarists of the 20th century? Not only does she hold a record for the most number of appearances on The Love Boat, but she's also appeared in more gay pride parades than most gay men will ever attend in their lives. And of course, the Del Rubio triplets, three sisters who perform traditional songs with big hair and colorful makeup, sort of like having three Trixie Mattels at once.
A beautiful sight, we're happy tonight, walking in the winter wonderland.
A lot of these guests are throwback to the 1950s and 60s, and none more so than Frankie Avalon and Annette Funicello. They were teen stars who appeared in a slew of beach movies, and Pee-wee's plucked them from the past and put them to work.
Did we finish making all those Christmas cards, Frank, Annette? I'm sorry, then you'll have to stay inside until you finish. It's snowing! It's snowing! Yeah, but no!
Talking cows notwithstanding, this star-studded extravaganza shares a style with more traditional Christmas specials. For example, the Judy Garland Christmas Show, which, like Pee-wee's special, was built around the conceit that we, the audience, have simply dropped by for a visit.
And I'm terribly sorry, but would you like to... I shouldn't keep you standing here this way. Come on in, come on.
If Judy's home looks familiar, it's because it was the basis for a Christmas episode of Glee shot 50 years later on an almost identical set. I can't resist a moment when television adapts and recycles its own past, taking something old and making it new again. And that's exactly what Pee-wee's doing with his special, seizing on classic icons like Frankie and Annette and turning them into something distinctly modern.
Let the cartoon begin!
So what's with all the 50s references? Well, the year the show aired coincided with the tail end of a surge of 1950s nostalgia that included shows like Happy Days, movies like Back to the Future, American Graffiti, and Grease. Grease, by the way, featured an appearance by Frankie Avalon. And it was produced by Alan Carr, who went on to produce the 1989 Oscars, one of the greatest nostalgia fiascos in history.
I have so many wonderful, wonderful memories.
I'm sorry, I'm getting distracted. There's just so much kitsch to talk about. But my point is that mainstream culture of the 1980s referenced a lot of 1950s, and not just in entertainment, in politics, too. After the sexual revolution and gay liberation and second wave feminism of the 60s and 70s, the 1980s saw a cultural and political backslide, with traditionalists rising to power and calling themselves the moral majority. The country even went so far as to elect a 1950s film star as president.
Then tell me, future boy. Who's president of the United States in 1985?
Ronald Reagan.
Ronald Reagan? The actor? Then who's vice president? Jerry Lewis.
That nostalgia for a less tolerant time might have been comforting for traditionalists, but it wasn't great for anyone who was marginalized. Queer folks, women, minorities, artists, outcasts. When the world is made for insiders, it's rough to be an outsider.
I'm a loner, Daddy. A rebel.
So what do you do when you want to participate in culture, but culture seems designed to exclude you? Well, one approach is to take that culture and transform it, reclaim it, create a caricature of the nostalgia by making it your own, what academics would call queering the culture. And to be clear, I don't mean that in terms of sexuality. There's nothing sexually queer about the show. Well, not that much, at least.
Look, everyone! A new wing to the Playhouse! Made entirely of fruitcakes! It's two more fruitcakes, Ronan.
Pee-wee is now handing fruitcakes to two sexy shirtless men. Nope, nothing queer at all about this. By queering, I mean that Pee-wee is taking something familiar and making something new out of it. He's adapting that kitschy 50s throwback, but instead of just imitating what came before, he's picking out the bits that he likes, traditional caroling, reruns of old cartoons, beatniks, and then putting a whole new sensibility on top of it, with the help of a small army of queer icons. Pee-wee's guest list might seem weirdly random at first, but think of it this way. Just about all of these guests spent their careers challenging mainstream culture. Joan Rivers was a groundbreaking female comedian, the Del Rubios reveled in sexuality despite their age, and just listen to Grace Jones talk about gender in this 1985 interview.
Are you feminine? Do you like being masculine?
I like being both, actually.
I don't think this selection of guests is random at all. These are all folks who had to fight for their careers. Oprah was sexually harassed and then fired from her first TV job in 1977. People have been writing off Cher only to see her make one comeback after another for decades. In the 1950s, a lot of radio stations wouldn't play Little Richard's songs unless they were covered by white artists like Pat Boone. But all of these folks are welcome at Pee-wee's Playhouse. And that's because Pee-wee's queering of tradition goes beyond just an art style. It also extends to the way that he celebrates the holiday. Like Judy Garland, Pee-wee follows traditions like having a tree, exchanging gifts, inviting over family and friends. But here, they're all chosen family, members of his clan of campy characters and oddballs. Folks who might not fit in or have an easy time of it out in the real world of the 1980s, and certainly not in the real world of the 1950s. But like so many outsiders, they found each other and created a family that makes sense. And this incredibly weird episode of TV showed the world that chosen families celebrate too, in a way that they want and with the people that they want. And I hope that's how the holidays find you. Land ho, we're pulling into port. Thanks for cruising along with us, and thanks to everyone who makes Culture Cruise possible with a pledge of a dollar or more a month on Patreon, folks like Myron Bartlett. Head over to patreon.com/MattBaum or click the link in the description to check out some of the rewards available to backers. And now, if you'll excuse me, there's someone at the door.
I'll miss you, baby!
It's Cher!
If you'd like to see more Culture Cruise videos, head on over to youtube.com/MattBaum. I have videos about the Golden Girls, Star Trek, Mary Tyler Moore, Murphy Brown, and so much more. I'd like to thank you for joining me for this very special holiday episode. As we draw things to a close, I hope you'll join us for a little caroling. I asked some past Sewers guests to record themselves singing a traditional holiday melody and joined everyone together in song. Big thanks to everybody who participated, Cody Melcher, Bill Antonio, Daniel Krolik, Bill Fair, Brady Ginn, Jonathan Blaylock, and John Coons for arranging the music. And now, without any further ado, it is my great honor to present Judy Garland.
Gloria, you're always on the run now, running after somebody. You gotta get him somehow. I think you've gotta slow down before he starts to blow it. I think you're headed for a breakdown, so be careful not to show it.
You really don't remember? Was it something that he said? All the voices in your head, Gloria, Gloria. Don't you think that you're falling?
If everybody wants to, why isn't anybody calling?
You don't have to answer. Leave them hanging on the line.
That's it.